are talking, you may not agree, so get your own podcast. Luke, Stan, Dan, and Michelle all love sitcoms. What about you? Do you love sitcoms? This is a podcast about sitcoms, another effing podcast about sitcoms. Hi, everybody. It's another effing podcast about sitcoms.
It's another effing pasta cast.
It's possibilities, guys. I'm your host, Michelle Lykowski, just going through it. And I'm joined by Dan McInerney and my husband, Stan Lykowski, and we are here to talk about the first.
I'm also here, too.
Luke Ward.
You were. I thought she mentioned you first.
I thought I said.
Oh, you did? I just heard my husband, Stan Lykowski, and Dan. Okay, I've been drinking.
Okay, so anyway, we're going to talk about the first of the AV Club's 25 years from 1990 to 2015. This is the one that they named number one.
And it's the number one episode.
Number one episode of the sitcoms. We still are not going to talk about that right yet because I have something to talk about before that. Go.
Okay.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah. So this is, Michelle, you say your thing first and then I
wanted to talk about Desperately. I am in love with Only Murders in the Building. I finally started
it. It's so good.
I'm almost done. I went through it like a wildfire goes through California. Ugh.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
Start using that analogy. That's all she ever uses.
I went through it like Epstein goes through a middle
school. Oh, shit. I thought I was bad. Yours is worse. Anyway. Oh my goodness. So good. My only issue with it, Amy Ryan, her age versus Steve Martin's age. Like, why couldn't you have found a woman who was in their 60s to date Steve Martin? Anyone?
I think Amy Ryan's in her...
No, she's not. She's two years older than I am.
Oh, okay. Well, and Steve Martin is 80.
77?
Wait, is that a joke or is he actually that old? He's not that old, is he?
70s.
I think he's 80.
I don't think he's 80.
He's gotta be. Yeah, oh, gotta man. Be up there.
Yeah, I know.
Hold on.
I'm actually just sad because I don't like him being that advanced in age. I mean, I don't think he should. 52
he's
to
70. 80. He's 76. 76 years
old. And he was born in Waco, Texas, guys. Did you know that?
No.
I did not know that.
Yeah. What was I going to say?
Have you watched it, Dan?
I have not.
No.
I loved it. I don't know where you're at, but there's an episode where they do something. I don't want to give anything away, but it's like the fifth or sixth episode where they just use a technique that's very interesting.
Okay.
That's all I'll say.
I don't mean to harken back to our prior podcast because I talked about Saturday Night Live.
Our Richard Pryor.
Oh, speaking God. Of, it's an SNL thing.
Love but Steve, cocaine.
Steve Martin did a clip that they had like shot that week, which was really funny.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So you get another chance to look at it. And also, if you remember, he has a very funny Christmas wish list from when he hosted in like the 90s. They showed that too.
I want all the children of the world, sing in harmony. I'd like to have sex with Paulina Porizkova.
Wow.
$30 million deposited into my account once a quarter. And then, all right, it doesn't matter. Just watch the show. It's better.
And that is, and also I started Shrink Next Door and Stan has finished it. So. I think did we talk about that?
I couldn't do that one. I don't know.
Well, I already knew the story because of the podcast. So, like, how terrible it gets was not going to be a surprise to me. But it is as awful as you think. And knowing that it's a true story obviously makes it 1,000 times worse. But that being said, I did enjoy it. It does take you actually the events unfold into February 2021, so they literally do take you up to that point.
Oh, wow.
And you get to see what happens. But like, I hate that the takeaway is there's terrible people in the world who will take advantage of people who are hurting.
That's a different podcast for another day.
This is a high happy one.
I tried watching. I did not like it. I thought that I did not like the portrayal of Jews.
Non-Jewish individuals?
Done in my perspective.
I felt like the performances, other than Catherine Hahn, were more stereotypes than actual performances.
Again, why couldn't they have hired any Jews in Hollywood? Isn't Hollywood supposed to be just littered?
I feel like your Jews argument is against anti-Semitism is a little anti-Semitic.
But, I mean,
that's the whole thing.
I feel like you're still digging a hole as you go, but that's
fine. You know
fine.
What I'm saying. Like, I am jokingly saying it. Yes.
They couldn't find one Jewish actor. Yes. I don't know if Paul Rudd is or is not Jewish.
I looked it up. I don't think he is, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, no, I felt like, and in fact, those two, well, Paul Rudd, not as much, although I didn't like his performance either, but like Will Ferrell is the kind of actor who you never forget you're watching Will Ferrell.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. Especially for a part like this, also he plays
Paul Rudd is Jewish, I apologize.
Okay. I think he plays like a 32-year-old at parts, and then he plays like an older man present day. Mm-hmm. Not buying him being 32. He is, you know, we talked about age Steve Martin. Like, that was a big problem as well. But I did not watch past episode 3, I think, of it. I would very much like to listen to the podcast. I have not done that.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's good.
I will definitely listen
really
to that. But
good.
I loved Catherine Hahn. I mean, that woman can do no wrong.
No wrong.
But, yeah, did not like it.
She was Joe on the Facts of Life reboot thing they did, that little ABC
yes,
thing.
I have not watched that. Yeah, yeah.
I have complex feelings over it because, flat out, comedy writing wasn't as good in the 80s as it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not watch it with a nostalgic... I remembered so much of the Facts of Life episode. I really did. But it's just really, I didn't enjoy it so much as I just felt like I was working to get through it.
Right. Okay.
So, anyway.
Well, speaking of Catherine Hahn and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I've been watching Hawkeye.
Hot guy.
Yep. I really like it a lot. I've talked to some people who don't love it as much. I feel like it is the diehard of the MCU.
It's
just
a
normal guy.
Movie.
It is take place at Christmas.
It does. Yeah.
Oh.
It is just, you know, what I like about Hawkeye is he is a normal guy who kind of got swept up into the Avengers universe. And so I just like that. And Haley Steinfeld's great. And I think it's fun.
I want to go back and apologize to all of our Jewish listeners.
Thank you. I will talk to them at our next meeting.
if you could.
Yep.
Remind them of any good I've done.
Yep.
Uh-huh. You'll have to search. Dan, have you seen anything?
No, not really. I mean, I've been watching Hawkeye. It's
Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I agree. It's great. Yeah, I mean, I love, like, Luke, did you read the Matt Fraction run that this is loosely based on?
No.
Okay. So I'll just say very briefly. So Hawkeye was sort of a character that didn't really have a thing other than the fact that he could shoot arrows, and he was in the Avengers. And then there was a run by Matt Fraction on Hawkeye where he reimagined him as basically what this show is, where a guy who just had no superpowers and would just jump into the middle and get his ass kicked and like was very chaotic and everything. And it was a very interesting thing, and brought in the hearing impairment thing, which was a big part of the show so far.
Yeah, that's been very cool.
Do they use ASM?
Mm-hmm. They do, yeah. He has hearing aids.
American Sign Language.
American Sign Language.
I don't know what the M silent.
American but, Sign Mo.
Yeah.
He has hearing aids because could hear, but there's a funny moment where she's like, oh, why do you have hearing aids? And there's a quick montage of him being next to explosions going off throughout the various
That's
movies.
Funny.
And he's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just something that happened.
Yeah.
But then there's another character who was born deaf and he's the bad guy.
Now,
but that's another story.
In the comics, mm-hmm. is she also an amputee or is that just because the actress is an amputee?
You know what? I don't know. She's not in like the main villains are the Tracksuit Mafia in the Hawkeye. I haven't read in a long time. I don't remember if that character is in the comics, but
the Tracksuit Mafia?
Yeah.
Yes, there's a gang called the Tracksuit Mafia,
and they literally say,
what do,
like,
they wear?
We're
tracksuits.
They literally, like, we're that. She says something like, "That's the most on point gang name I've ever heard in my life."
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And are they from that Korean film that is so popular with the kids today?
Squid Game.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Sorry about that.
They're all Jewish, which is weird.
Yeah.
Listen,
I mean,
there's more tracksuit mafia than Jews in Hollywood. It's great because I can attribute it to her name, and now I'm not the bad guy.
Yeah,
I looked up Paul Rudd, and he is a member of a small minority in America, which is that he is a Kansas City Royals fan. So many Kansas City Royals fans out there.
Yep. And his parents were English born.
Oh,
well, we do have Jews in England.
No. It said English born Jewish people.
Okay, good.
People. That's how they said it. Exactly. English-born Jewish parents.
Okay, I'm going to move on from this.
Speaking of Jews, Seinfeld.
This podcast is called Mo Keeps Digging a Hole. and jump into... this is the number one episode.
We did it, guys! We did it! 25 reviews!
We are going to do a wrap-up show, but I was looking at the list, and I was like, wow, the first one we did was in June, so it's been a while of us going through this, but there's a number one episode. It is an episode of Seinfeld called The Chinese Restaurant, season 2, episode 11, written by Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld, directed by Tom Sharones. Original air date, May 23rd, 1991. Jerry, Elaine, and George stop for a quick Chinese dinner before seeing Plan 9 from Outer Space, but circumstances at the eatery make them miss the movie. Now, I feel like I'm going to be the one to defend this episode on this show, which is fine.
No, I'm also going to defend it as well.
Well, the only thing I was going to say was watching this, it did feel very dated. However, I just want to say I don't think that's the fault of the episode. I think... this was a landmark episode, which is why I think it's number one on the list. However you feel about that, this was something, you know, this had never been done before. And I've read behind the scenes stuff. And just for total clarity on this, NBC up until the show aired, did everything in their power to stop this. And basically were like, this will ruin our network if this episode airs, because it is so crazy. It is so unbelievable that you could do something like this. And now it just seems like a regular episode of a sitcom. Like, it doesn't seem weird at all.
Yeah.
Like, any other show would do this. But the idea that nothing happens in this episode, they're in one location the whole time, that there is no real plot to the episode. There are subplots that are going on, but like those kind of come and go. Just that idea was unthinkable at the time. So this really, like, again, was a landmark episode, even though now it doesn't seem that exciting because, you know, and other shows have come along to do this exact thing and frankly have probably done it better. But the fact that this was the first is I think worthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly Dinner Party owes a bit to this episode.
I would agree with that.
You know, it felt like this episode was a one-act play. I also think this episode, in a lot of ways, is the least Seinfeld-y Seinfeld episode ever.
It felt like a play. I felt like I was watching something that I had watched in the 90s on off-Broadway.
Yeah. And I thought it was funny. I appreciate all of the heavy lifting that it did for everything else. There's some great moments too. George telling his story about why he has to get a hold of that woman because he basically had to take a dump in the middle of, but like it's worded and performed so perfectly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think so it's great. I mean, like it because Seinfeld is such a terrible actor, Jason Alexander and Julia Louis-Dreyfus shine so much. They are so great when he's giving that monologue about, you know, like the only thing I can say to her that might work is if I am in fact Batman and I just saw the bat signal and I have to go fight crime. And he gives that monologue. It's great. And when she gives the monologue about being a child and going to dinner and feeling special, you know,
and now
awesome.
It's not special anymore.
And now I feel like a pig waiting for them to fill the trough.
Her hair is so thick.
It's so thick.
It is. You couldn't. You could shoot a bullet into it, and I'm pretty sure she would stop it.
It was the lowest pony scrunchie I've ever seen. I was so focused on it.
It's interesting that the number one and number two are from 91. It's a fun little fact.
Interesting.
Well, Simpsons 93. That's but, what I said. But same area. but yeah, you're right. I mean, well, I don't want to go too much into the weeds this early, but I mean, there's so many things where I was just like, wow, this episode is from a different time.
Yeah.
There are so many things that just, things that would have instantly been cleared up. Problem, like, so one thing is that George has to call his girlfriend. And he needs the payphone, of course, because it's 1991. It starts with a Seinfeld joke. The stand-up bit in the beginning is about a payphone.
Right.
And it's about a phenomenon that I don't want to, you know, constantly bring up the fact that I'm the youngest person on the show.
Oh, but you do.
And here we are. Yeah, but here we are.
But I'm just saying my skin looks great. No. but he's talking about a phenomenon that I actually don't remember. I was, by the time this was happening, or by the, I should say by the time this was over, I was not using payphones. Like I was too young for this, which is that he hangs up the payphone and then the phone company calls him and wants more money, which again is a phenomenon I don't think ever happened to me.
I vaguely remember it only in that, which I don't understand why they didn't do before. The phone company would go, "You have 1 minute left on this call," and you'd be like, "Okay," right. And then it would just hang up.
Yep,
like,
I remember that.
Well, that I remember. I don't remember ever them being like, "Hey, you talk for 5 minutes, give us another quarter." Like,
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, who's going to do that?
I remember, in college they did. Yeah, I remember.
So. No, I remember this episode. I remember asking my mom, like, what would they do if they didn't, you know,
get the money?
If they didn't do it. Nothing. And I think they charged the other person.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It reminds me of the, oh gosh, the duo from Chicago, the improv duo, the super famous one,
TJ and DJ.
No, back in the 40s or 50s, Nichols and May. They have a great the guy has like a flat tire and spends his last dime trying to like get help, and she plays various levels of operators that he's just has to like get over hurdles to get like his call through. It's really funny. Anywho. Yeah. Boy, did I suck the air out of this one.
No, but I mean, but again, that's a phenomenon. I mean, even I remember like occasionally calling and having to talk to the operator, which is, you know, I think for my kids, I might as well talk about like buggy whips or, you know, things like they can't even comprehend that. But so anyway, so George has to use the payphone. People are keep being on the phone. And then just the idea of like, well, I left her a message for her to call the restaurant, and the restaurant will tell me if I have a phone call, which is like, again, a concept that we can't even, like he would just, now, I mean, obviously he would just text her and in 5 seconds, like she would text back and that would be the end of it. Like this, and there's so much of that, like them trying to get to the movie and you know, now you take out your phone and like see when the next showing is, like, but there was this time where like it literally feels like we were, you know, thinking back to it now, it feels like we were living in the dark ages. Like you would just be out on the street and you had no way of getting information or telling people things. Like it seems impossible.
One thing I really appreciated too was Jerry's mental countdown of how much time they have left before they actually just can't eat there because of the movie. That feels very accurate and like, I do that math in my head all the time. We have to get seated now. We have to do this. Yeah. Math. Like I really did appreciate that.
Yeah.
And the fact that the episode's in real time. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, like they go to commercial break at one point and he picks up right where he left off.
Yeah. I actually thought, and I almost thought it was a single shot. And then I'm like, no, there's no way this was a single shot.
No.
Now, I know that you both gave it why it's ranked number one. I appreciate all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it
go ahead,
bored
shit
me
on
to
it.
Tears watching this episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I did laugh. Actually, George made me laugh out loud a couple times.
George is so funny.
And I honestly didn't watch it going, I can't wait for this to be done. But like, it's sort of I'm watching the sausage be made. I get what they're doing. This is an episode about nothing. Nobody will advance, blah, blah, blah. I just don't enjoy watching that so much. Like, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's such a negative show that it's really, like you said about cringing with The Office, there's still some hope there. I've never felt hope with the Seinfeld. The Seinfeld.
That is one
well,
thing.
Well, that's a, they actively chose.
I know,
to
and,
go that,
and that's hard yeah, yeah. for me. That's a hard.
Well, it's funny, Luke. I never about to say something, but I was going to say that was another thought I had that. This show is like everyone in New York on the show is so mean.
Yeah.
Like when the woman takes grabs the phone and George is like, oh, I was waiting for the phone. She's like, well, you would have the phone if you're waiting right. for it. Like, I mean, if it was me, and I mean, admittedly, not everyone is like me, but if someone was like, oh, I was waiting for that, I'd be like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Here
same
you
thing.
Go.
Yeah.
Like, but no one ever yields. And people I also wouldn't do that, not just because I'm a good guy, but then I'll be like, 2 minutes later, I'm still going to be in the restaurant with this guy.
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yep. Like, everyone is so confrontational, whereas, like, I'm always doing the math of, like, what should I do here? Because, like, again, in 2 minutes, I'm going to be sitting at a restaurant yep. with this same person, and it's going to be super awkward. So it's just so funny how everyone is so confrontational. Everyone is so mean to everyone all the time.
But I do
but
like
Luke,
that
I think
moment.
You had a point.
No. I just, because, yeah. yes, I agree with you, but also there's that moment where George is like, you know, people are the worst. And I don't. And the guy goes, I'm yeah, really yeah. sorry. Oh, that, don't worry about it. You know, like, yeah. that's yeah. really great. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like, I think it would be a fun play to watch, or a night out of one acts,
yeah.
mm-hmm. or whatever.
But then you're ready for that. You're keyed up that you're watching a play. You
I mean,
know
I
what
knew,
I mean?
Yeah, but I knew going into this one. I mean, I knew this one. I've seen this one a million times. Yeah. And I knew going into it what I was. Do I think it's the number one episode of all time?
No, 25 years.
25 years? No. But. I appreciate the groundwork that it laid yeah, yeah. for all the other shows.
I mean, that's what Seinfeld is. Like, it is, we couldn't have Arrested Development. We couldn't have The Office.
Right.
We couldn't have
right.
so many things because of Seinfeld. And that's always, but I mean, what were they thinking when they wrote the 25 best episodes of a sitcom? Were they thinking historically, this is why we have these things?
Right.
I don't know. Like what?
Well, I mean, I guess that's a question of, like, you know, what counts on the list. Like, does the fact that this was so influential, you know,
right.
bump it up the list? I mean, it just reminds me of, like, when I was in film school and we would watch.
Can we go one goddamn episode without you bringing that up?
Well, I was gonna say
that's actually the first time I've ever heard that.
I know that's why I'm.
But when we would,
he's
you know,
wearing
when
a beret,
we
by the way.
We would watch something like. We would watch something like Birth of a Nation, right?
Yeah.
Which obviously has its own problems.
Guys, this episode
being,
is going.
Don't
really
get Michelle
well,
talking about
no,
Birth
no, no,
of a
no.
Nation.
I just want to say,
she,
but I just want to say,
fall sorry, on the sorry, side sorry. You would expect her to fall on.
That's okay. But the only thing I was going to say was just that, you know, obviously is a very old movie, and the racial politics, I would say, are not ideal. but we would be like, let's. It's incredible how this is like. That's the first movie to have. Intercutting,
right.
cutting between yeah. two stories.
Right.
And so you're watching it be, you know, to learn something, you know, about it. And obviously, like, other movies would take that and do it much better
right.
and yeah. not have the KKK be the heroes of the story.
It happened one night.
Yeah, yeah. So, we watched It Happened One Night. And that's another a good example, too, where, you know, to modernize, that movie's pretty slow, but so it is good. Fascinating to see, but it's fascinating to see the beginning. So I think that, you know, so. People would put stuff, you know, you would say Citizen Kane is the greatest movie of all time. Is it, or is it just that, and it's very good, but is it just because it was the first one
right.
to do, it yeah. was groundbreaking,
right.
right? So I think certainly the fact that this episode is groundbreaking, and again, guys, I cannot emphasize too much how, like, the executives at NBC were terrifying
that
this
amazing.
Episode was going to air.
Yeah. Yeah. So NBC it was, gets scared a lot.
But it was only, I mean, well, something, like, think about that episode of oh, shit, I'm sorry, not Family Matters. What's the one with Alex B. Keaton?
No, it's
Family Matters.
Nope, it's Family Matters.
But, like, I mean, that episode probably, you know, came out 5 years before this one did. So, and it seems like night and day.
Oh,
between
that's
those
the
two
one
things.
With Alex going to. Are you talking
let's
about the one
not.
Where,
let's not. It's already been a tough.
But I'm
year.
Saying,
let's
but I'm saying, like.
It.
But this is 91. This is, you know, just barely in the 90s.
Yeah.
So yeah. this, you know, this at the time was so different.
Yeah.
You know, The Simpsons is only in its first season or first or second season at this point. So, like, there was a sea change that was happening.
Yeah.
And this episode was so influential. And, of course, other shows would come along and do this exact thing better, like I'm saying. Like, I think that any random episode of 30 Rock is better than this. But... they, you know, it's not Seinfeld's fault because they did it first.
Right,
so they didn't
right.
they didn't mm-hmm. have something to go off of and be like, well, this is good, but this could be better. It was the first time that they did it. So
yeah, and you know, it's interesting too, especially with a show like this, where, you know, we're raised, at least like when I was in film school. There it is.
Do you need me to talk about my acting?
That'd be great. Did you go to theater school?
Yeah.
You know, you're told like, okay, you got to figure out the conflict. You know, the characters need an arc, and you need to do this. And I remember when I was learning about it, like, why they don't need that? I'm gonna tear the world up and blah blah blah. And really, you know, those things exist so that people, you know, things like Save the Cat exist so that people have something that they can kind of hedge their bets against. Mm-hmm. You know, I get why the NBC execs were like
freaking
out, because they you know, their Save the Cat at the time was like, you have to learn a lesson, and you have to, all right, the characters have to love each other, and blah blah blah, and this didn't happen. And, you know, there's a great moment actually in Seinfeld where George says, this is a show about nothing, and you know why would you watch it? And he's like, because it's on TV. And the executive says, not yet, you know. Yeah. So which really contradicts what the show is trying to go for. I lost my point. I feel like I just did that to tell you I went to film school. I don't really know.
This episode has a structure, right? And it has a plot, even if the plot is sort of hidden. But it's certainly like, you know, if it literally was like an episode where they just turned the camera on and people came in and out of the restaurant, that would not be interesting. Right. But you know, there is definitely that structure, but it is trying to at least tweak it somewhat, or at least, like I said, hide the ball. So it seems like nothing is happening, even though obviously things are definitely happening.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, I forgot Kramer's not in this one.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. And also, one thing that is probably picky on my part, but bugged me all throughout, they didn't have all four of their people. Don't you not get seated until you have all your people?
Which is what I think the point was, that they weren't going to be seated until...
Do we think that's why they were getting by? But they never called that out, right?
That's what I thought, because of working in Manhattan and always insisting.
I think, unfortunately, the main joke of why they're not being seated is because there is an inept Asian man running the place. And I didn't take it that way.
So people are hopping. Well, I guess you're right, because there's no rhyme or reason why they're being hopped, right?
Right. And I think it's just really, there's an elitism to this show and to this episode that is really problematic, where they feel they deserve. I mean, the lady even says, you should be seated by who's hungriest, and that's me. And then at one point she like, let's get out of here. I don't want to be here anymore. They don't serve me. I mean, that is the problematic part of this show, is that there is a sense of entitlement to these characters that is undeserved. So that to me was like why they weren't getting seated.
Okay.
I think we've discussed this before, but like there is a question of, like, how intentional is that? Like, is the TV show saying these people are better because they are, you know, upper middle class white people, and therefore the city should be run around them? Right. Or is this just a show about horrible entitled people?
Right.
I think the show actually went back and forth on how right they are.
Yeah.
But there certainly is a, you know, an otherness to, like, oh, you know, that especially like when the by the way, James Hong, who's the at least at the time was the Chinese actor in literally everything.
Yeah.
That guy's been in.
He's so
good. In everything. But like the point where he like leans over and talks to the woman in Chinese and they're like, what are you saying? Yeah. Like that definitely feels like, you know how those people are, kind of joke.
Yeah.
But I mean, it wasn't like, it wasn't terrible. But yeah, I think you can decide for yourself how intentional you're supposed to be. Like, these people are justifiably entitled, or are just entitled jerks.
It's a little bit of a Karen Rorschach test.
Exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, thank you. That was my
Yeah. So yeah, anything else? I mean, there's the
a couple things.
Okay.
Number one, the smell of phones in the 90s was exquisitely bad, and they did not act to that. And I think they should have.
Yep.
Okay. Number two, they should have left. And that's it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I it was just pure poor planning. The whole episode is around poor planning.
Just that. And number three, movie phone. They could have found another.
I don't know. Did movie phone exist in 91? I don't know if it did.
Here I go.
I know there's a Seinfeld episode about it.
Right,
yeah.
But I don't know if it's embracing the fact that it's a new technology. You know what I mean?
And it seems like
But even they knew when the movie was. They just didn't do anything about
it. They didn't do anything.
It was one theater, one night only.
89.
I guess that's true.
Movie phone started in 1989.
Oh, okay. All right. So
I was living in Manhattan when this was filmed. So,
there you go.
You know, just one thing to note to go way back to our earliest podcast days. Not that I guess it applies, but you know, we always hold it up to, is this episode just marking time? Yes.
Yeah.
like the bit about Elaine eating the egg roll off of the table. I'm like, that's, you guys had 5 extra minutes to kill. You weren't sure what to do. Like,
right.
You know,
well, but I think that's. But
that was playing with their face.
That's the point, right? It's like the unbearable, you know, waiting for a table. What do we do to keep ourselves occupied?
Right. But to go back to Dan's point, to me, that's a plot point. That's none of my friends would have ever walked up to somebody's table and pretended that they were going to eat an egg roll off of it. That feels like production to me.
I don't know. I think my friends and I would have done
that. Yeah, I would.
Sorry.
I guess my friends are lame. Sorry, my friends.
When I went to Ringling
Brothers Clown College, we all had morals about how we would do our jokes.
Okay.
Stop eating those people's food, you clowns.
Okay, get out of the car.
I
did not hate it. I did not love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand why it's number one. But do I agree?
Yeah. You don't have to agree.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean,
you can disagree.
All of my poo-pooing, I was surprised when it was over, like, which tells me I enjoyed the whole thing. Like, I didn't just wait for this to end. I mean, to Luke's point, Jason Alexander and Julie Louis-Dreyfus are just very good actors.
Just give them all the money.
Yeah, they definitely made this episode work.
So. If I were making this list, I would have put somewhere in the top 10, The Contest.
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought this episode.
Honestly, I thought it was The Contest was number one.
Yeah.
And also because I think that, again, I think this episode is probably more groundbreaking than The Contest, but The Contest is easily the funniest episode of Seinfeld and has probably the best joke ever, which is Kramer coming in and putting the money on the counter and saying, I'm out.
Yep.
I remember watching that live and I could not believe that just happened.
Was it a minute?
This is incredible.
I know.
Well, there's so many questions about it, but
so
just the fact that because it was one of the rare times in life where I was just like, wow, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Like, that is such a great joke. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well,
neither did we as an audience.
But it was just such a shock and so funny.
Yeah,
but anyway.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. This was the episode that was like, oh, they did an excellent job versus very funny.
Well, and again, I it feels like that thing of being in film school and being like, oh, yes, I see how it's cross-cutting
and this is an
early version of that. And that's very fascinating. But I wasn't sitting there watching those movies being like, this is great.
Yeah.
It was more interesting.
Really yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's very
good. I just want you to know that.
Listen, Kane.
Just based on our conversation, though, it probably is the best example of a single encapsulation of what the show is about. Like, you know what I mean? It's literally taken a show about nothing to its absolute extreme.
Yeah.
Yes, but I agree with you 100%. 100%. But for whatever reason, it still feels like a very unique episode of this show. It feels almost like the least Seinfeld.
It's the play.
It felt like a play. It's
the play. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. It is. Yeah. It is taking its main theory to the extreme.
Yeah.
To the extreme.
Right. Yeah. They just Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld had a couple of four logos and they wrote this episode.
I don't know. What
well,
that
and
means.
this so reminds me too of like, I mean, you know, of being younger, because like an episode like The Contest is a good example too of like, I think one of the main things of the show is like these people don't have anything better to do with their lives. Yeah. Like they have time to do like contests and like wait for. I mean, now like we wanted to go to Chipotle for lunch yesterday, and we went to the door and there was a line and we were like, forget it,
yeah,
because I was like, first of all, we have kids, but also like we got shit to do,
right?
Like as opposed to when I was in my early 20s, being like, yeah, well, wait, I got nothing else going on. I don't have to be anywhere.
Yeah, the only
not
anywhere,
responsible for anyone.
The only anywhere for them to be is the movies, which is another luxurious
that, you know, it's funny now that you bring that up. When I lived in New York, I remember thinking like if there was a line at a place, I would just go to the one next to it.
Right.
Like I remember I lived on the Upper West Side and there was a brunch place that always had a line out the door and next to
Popover.
It. Popover? It was near Popover, but it wasn't Popover. I think it was called like Good Enough to Eat or something like that.
Yes, it was.
that's a really selling name.
I know. And that's what we would say.
But it was very popular.
It was super popular. And next door was another brunch place. And we would just go there and eat and have a great brunch. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Like the real New York thing to do would be like, all right, let's just go to the place two doors down. I mean, there's a million restaurants.
Well, that was the other question, too. And they're like, well, where can we go? I'm like, guys, you're in Manhattan.
Right.
You literally go. I'm sure next door there's another restaurant. Like, what are you waiting
so
for?
So many great Chinese restaurants on the Upper West Side.
Oh, of course.
So many.
I love when she says, I can get a hot dog at the movies. A movie theater hot dog? I'd rather lick the food off the floor.
Yeah.
And another thing, with the idea of eating food in a movie theater is like, so ridiculous, and I was just like, Alamo Draft House is coming. Yeah. Like soon it will be a common thing, but not yet.
Not 91.
Anyone else have any other thoughts?
No.
I disagree with this being number one.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone want to make the case for this beating the dinner party? All right. I think we can put that to rest,
guys.
It's good.
Guys, we did it.
We did it.
We got to number one.
Boop, boop, boop. And it was The Office. Dinner party.
Such a letdown. It's over.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well.
But we accomplished so much.
We did.
We got through a lot, you guys. We got through a lot.
Do you know how many people out there were waiting to find out which episodes we thought
because they
were
didn't
the
know about Google?
Both of them.
Oh, right.
Yep.
All right. Well, our next episode is going to do a wrap up and we're going to talk about the 24 episodes that we watched, because we skipped one. But we'll talk about that, next week. But yeah, we'll go through the list and then we're also going to talk about the episode that we would have put, on this list if we had that power, and we're going to include everything, up until 2021. So
that's going to just change. It's going to blow it wide open.
It's going to, guys, minds will be blown.
but that's it. Anyone, anyone says anything else?
I would just want to apologize.
To Kansas City Royal fans.
Most definitely.
Michelle, take us home.
Thank you so much for listening to another effing podcast about sitcoms. I'm your host, Michelle Lykowski.
I'm Stan Lykowski.
I'm Luke Ward.
I'm Dan, the producer.
And we love you. Thank you so, so, so much for going on this journey with us today and for 6 months.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This has been another effing podcast about sitcoms. The music for our theme song is by Ryan Satoy, and the lyrics and vocals are by our own Michelle Lykowski. Our logo was created by Luke Ward. Follow us on Instagram, and if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, well, we'd certainly appreciate it. Another effing podcast about sitcoms will return in this time slot next week.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.